Experience and realization take birth. Rechungpa then asked, Jetson, after receiving your guru's instructions, did you stay with him or did you go into mountain retreat? Milarepa replied, after giving me practice instructions, the guru told me that it was time to exert myself in meditation. Bringing excellent provisions along with me, I went to meditate in the mountain cave of Lodrak Tanya Drak, where my guru had directed me to go. I would light an offering lamp filled with butter, place it on my head, and not move until the butter in the lamp was exhausted. I meditated like this day and night. After 11 months, the guru and his consort came, bringing with them an excellent Ganachakra feast. The guru exclaimed, son, you have been able to meditate for 11 months without letting your seat get cold. How excellent! Now tear down the wall of your retreat and come out and refresh yourself in the presence of your old father. Come out and tell me what experiences you have had in there. I thought to myself, refreshing myself is not important, but since it is the guru's command, I must go. I began to dismantle the wall at the opening of the cave, but remembering how wonderful my retreat had been, I could not bring myself to continue, and I remained still. After a short time, Lady Dagmema approached the cave and said, son, are you not coming out? Respectfully, I replied, I cannot bear to tear down this wall. My mother answered, there is no fault in you coming out. In fact, it makes a most auspicious connection with the profound secret Matryana for you to do so. But especially if you do not come out, the guru will be angry, which will mess up the auspiciousness and have other negative consequences. That would not be good. So tear down that wall immediately and come out. I knew she spoke the truth, so I took down the wall and came out. The guru said, now we, father and son, will perform a generation stage deity practice. Dabmema, prepare a Ganachakra feast. When we were turning the wheel of the Ganachakra, the guru said, son, what certainty in the practice instructions has arisen within you? What have you experienced and realized? What is your understanding at this point? Relax your mind and answer me. Feeling great faith in and great respect for the guru, I knelt down, joined my palms together, and crying, offered the guru my experience and realization. I began by offering the seven branch prayer. This was the first song of realization I ever sang.
To your impure disciples who need to be tamed, you display a variety of nirmana kaya forms, and before your pure retinue you shine perfectly as some bogakaya. I bow to you, Lord, in a melody like Brahma's with 60 qualities that each in their own language completely understands. You teach genuine dharmas 84,000 ways. I bow to your enlightened sound, emptiness speech. In the sky of Dharmakaya, luminous clarity, obscurations of attributes are nowhere to be found. This luminous space pervades all that is known. To your mind of unchanging Dharmakaya I bow. Within the pure palace of Dharmadhatu is your unchanging, selfless, illusory form. Great Mother of Buddhas, past, present, and to come, Dharmema, my mother, at your feet I bow. To the ones you've brought together, your enlightened sons, and your students who follow your every command, Thus to your whole retinue, to all it includes, I offer prostrations with sincerest respect. And in all the worlds of the whole universe, all the offering substances there are to be found, together with my own body I offer to you. I confess each and every wrong deed I have done. I rejoice in all positive actions performed. Please turn Dharma's wheel in a mighty way. And until samsara is empty of pain, Great Lama remain, Great Lama remain. Whatever merit I gain is for all sentient beings.
Having first made this seven-branch supplication, I began to offer this answer to the Guru's question. By the great blessing power of the immaculate enlightened activity, immeasurable compassion, and unrepayable kindness of the Guru, undifferentiable from Vajradhara, and his consort and sons, I, his vassal, have had some small realizations, which are actually just understandings. I beseech you, with your enlightened mind that is of the nature of unchanging Dharmata, to listen for just a short while to my account of them.
First, this body that is a product of the 12 dependent links of existence, beginning with ignorance and the karmic actions conditioned by it, that is fully ripened as material flesh and blood, and that possesses consciousness that has the ability to perceive, is for virtuous individuals who desire liberation a great ship endowed with the freedoms and resources. For those who perform non-virtuous karmic actions and thereby accumulate negativity, the body is a guide that leads them to the lower realms. Thus, the body is the border between higher and lower states. And so I understand, sir, that this is a time of extraordinary opportunity, a time when I can either do things very well and benefit myself immensely, or do things very poorly and suffer terrible loss as a result. Since freeing oneself from the source of suffering, that is samsara's ocean, is exceedingly difficult, I hope to liberate myself with the support of your power, O Lord and guide of wandering beings. Sir, I have understood that to this end, one must first request refuge from the Guru and the three rare and supreme ones, and train correctly in the refuge precepts. From among these sources of refuge as well, it is the Guru who is the source of all happiness and excellence.
And so,
embracing whatever the Guru says, and keeping one's samaya in an uncorrupted way, are the basic essential components of one's practice. Next, one must consider the difficulty of finding a precious human rebirth endowed with the freedoms and resources, death and impermanence, karmic cause and result, and the faults of samsara. By contemplating these intensely, one is able to thoroughly tame one's mind, and one will then long for liberation from samsara. At that point, it is necessary to rely on whichever set of vows of individual liberation is appropriate to one's own situation. Such vows will be the foundation of one's practice, and in reliance upon their support, one can climb up through the progression of higher and higher jhanas. One should guard the precepts of one's commitments as closely as one protects one's own eyes. If one happens to break one's vows, one should repair them. At the same time, to strive only for one's own peace and happiness is to get lost in the inferior jhanas, and therefore one should give rise to bodhicitta by yearning to completely liberate all sentient beings from samsara. Motivated by love and compassion, one should dedicate all of one's actions to benefiting others. I have understood understood that this is the mindset of the Mahayana. Having abandoned the paths of the Shravakas and Prajika Buddhas, and having entered the path of the Mahayana, with perfectly pure view as one's base, one can enter the unsurpassable path of Vajrayana. In order to realize the perfectly pure view, one must rely on a qualified guru who has the skill and wisdom to unerringly bestow upon and introduce oneself to the four empowerments in perfectly pure and complete rituals. Empowerment means to gain the power of the profound view. For this to happen, one must meditate step by step in a thorough and complete way. First, one must exert oneself in discovering the meaning of the teachings that are in harmony with what is taught in the causal philosophical vehicle, beginning with the selflessness of the individual. Relying on both scriptures and logical analysis, using many examples and logical reasons, one will search for but will not find the self. One will realize the selflessness of the individual. One must then rest the mind in the equipoise of this inability to find the self. When one remembers the many reasons why the self does not truly exist, and then rest the mind, concepts continuum will be cut off, and mind will remain motionless in non-conceptuality. When one remains in that state and needs someone else to keep track of how long one does so, because one is oneself unaware of how many days, months, or years have passed, shamatha has arisen. One must sustain this shamatha with mindfulness and introspection so that it does not turn into dullness and torpor. Heightening one's awareness, one realizes that appearances have no inherent nature and mind is luminous and non-conceptual, naked and vivid, clear and bright. This is the experience of shamatha. It can also be called vipassana. However, authentic vipassana does not dawn for ordinary individuals. I believe, sir, that one meets with authentic vipassana when one attains the first noble ground. Whatever one focuses on in one's meditation, one makes that focus one's path. One might have a variety of experiential visions during one's shamatha practice. One might see deities and have other types of visions, but these are all just meditative signs, and sir, I do not believe that they have any meaning. In short, an excellent experience of shamatha includes strong awareness and analysis performed by profound discriminating wisdom. This type of shamatha is the indispensable method for achieving vipassana. I think, sir, that it is like the lower rungs of a ladder one wishes to climb. Whatever shamatha meditation practice one does, whether it be shamatha with attributes or without, it must be preceded by the motivations of love and compassion and embraced at the outset by bodhicitta that focuses on benefiting others with whatever actions one performs. In the middle, one must use the perfectly pure view to purify one's practice within non-referentiality. And at the end, within non-referentiality, one should dedicate the practice's merit to the benefit of others and seal it with aspiration prayers. Sir, I have understood that when one follows these steps, it is the supreme of all paths. Sir, I have also understood that just as for a hungry person to understand there is food is not enough, he must actually eat the food, so it is that in order to realize emptiness, just to understand the meaning is not enough. One must meditate. Especially, sir, I understand that part of the method for realizing vipassana is during the post-meditative state to exert oneself without distraction in accumulating merit and purifying obscurations and past negative actions. To sum it up, sir, I understand that in yogis and yoginis practice, the stages of the view that are in harmony with the respective stages of secret mantra Vajrayana's path of the four empowerments are emptiness, equality, inexpressibility, and non-conceptuality. In order to realize all this that I have understood, I know that I must train my body rigorously, be satisfied with meager food, and give my mind many activities to perform. I must live and practice completely in the here and now. I must be able to practice in the face of death, without fear or regret. Whatever happens, I must know it to be of one taste. The Guru and his consort's kindness is unrepayable, and before them I have no material things to offer, but I will offer my practice for as long as I live. My ultimate realization I will offer to them in the Dharma Palace of Akanisha. To the Guru Mahabhadra, to Dharmamba, Mother of the Buddhas, and to the gathering of their emanation daughters and sons, Bodhisattvas, I have offered a few words about what I've understood. Please forgive my lack of understanding, my mistaken thoughts and my confusion. Please be patient with all the faults I have. Please correct them in accordance with the Dharma. O Lord, from the mandala of your noble compassion, raise a blessing, shine warm and bright, opening the burning lotus of my mind, so the sweet smells of experience and realization may be enjoyed. For this I can never repay your kindness, so continuously I'll offer you my practice. Please bless my practice to reach its perfection, and that its fruition will bring benefit to all. If in your humble vassal's report to you he's overstepped his bounds, please be patient with him.
And the Guru said, "Son, I had hoped that you would have the experience and realization you describe, and it has happened." He was tremendously happy. My mother, Daimema, said, "My son has such courage and ability as this." She was also very happy. They spoke many things of the Dharma to me and then returned to their home. I also returned to the cave, sealed myself inside, and meditated as before. At that time, the Guru went to the northern part of the province of U in order to benefit sentient beings. When he arrived at the home of Marpa Golek, he performed a Ganachakra, and later that night, Dakinis explained to him the meaning of a certain symbolic teaching that Pancha Naropa had given him, but that he had previously not understood. With signs, they urged him to go and meet Naropa, and with the intention to do so in mind, he returned to Droogloom. Several nights after Marpa's return, a woman appeared to me in a dream. She was as blue as the sky, wore silk garments, and the bone ornaments she wore heightened her beauty. She had sparkling blonde eyebrows and eyelashes. She told me, "Son, you have the instructions on Mahamudra and the six dharmas that can lead you to enlightenment if you practice them for a long time, but you do not have the instructions on transference and insertion of consciousness that require only one instant of meditation in order to achieve Buddhahood. You should request those teachings." Upon waking, I thought to myself, the way that woman was dressed, she could have been a Dakini. Was that a Dakini's prophecy or a demon's obstacle? Whatever it was, My guru will know. He has all the three times Buddhas in one, and he has all their realization. He knows everything. He can give the highest teachings on how to attain enlightenment, all the way down to the most common instructions on how to repair a broken jug. If this really was a Dakini's prophecy, I should request the teachings on the insertion of consciousness from him. So I took down the wall at the front of the cave and went before the guru. When the guru saw me, he said, "If you are not strict in your retreat, there is the danger of obstacles. What are you doing here?" Well, there was this woman, and she was dressed like this, and she said these things to me, and shit, I don't know. Was this an obstacle or a prophecy? If it was a prophecy, sir, I have come to request the teachings on the insertion of consciousness. Please give them to me. Marpa meditated for a short time and then said, "This was in fact a Dakini's prophecy. When I was about to return from India, Panchanaro spoke to me about the insertion of consciousness teachings, but I do not remember asking for them. We should look for them in the Indian texts." We, master and disciple, searched one whole day and night, and though we found many pages about the practice of transference of consciousness, we did not find even a single word about the practice of insertion of consciousness. The guru said, "The sign I received in the northern part of U was an exhortation to go and request this teaching. And also, there may be other teachings Naropa has that I do not know about. I will go to request them." Pointing to his advanced age and other reasons, Marpa's students made every conceivable attempt to dissuade him from going to India, but they could not convince him. He converted his disciples' offerings into a full bowl's measure of gold and set off with it for India. By the time Marpa arrived where Naropa usually resided, Naropa had gone off somewhere else to perform conduct. "I must search for Naropa even if it costs me my own life," Marpa thought, and he performed a variety of actions in order to bring together the causes and conditions that would result in an auspicious meeting with his guru. These resulted in unanimous prophecies and signs that his endeavors would succeed, and so he continued to search, supplicating all the while for his guru to appear. In a forest, Marpa found Naropa, and then invited him to the retreat called Pulahari. There, Marpa requested the teachings on the insertion of consciousness. Panchanaro asked him, "Did you think of doing this yourself, or did you receive a prophecy about it?" "Neither was it my own thought, nor did I receive a prophecy myself. My student Tupaga received a Dakini's prophecy about these teachings, and that is why I've come here to request them." "Amazing," Naropa explained, "that even in the dark land of Tibet there could be one like that, a person like the sun shining its rays on that snowy place." He joined his hands above the crown of his head and spoke this verse. "In the pitch darkness of that northern land, you are like the sun illuminating its snow. To you, the person named Tupaga, I offer my prostration. In the pitch darkness of that northern land, you are like the sun illuminating its snow. To you, the person named Tupaga, I offer my prostration. In the pitch darkness of that northern land, you are like the sun illuminating its snow. To you, the person named Tupaga, I offer my prostration." Closing his eyes, he bowed his head three times, and all the mountains, trees, plants, and flowers of India as well bowed three times in the direction of Tibet. Even to this day, the mountains and trees of Pulahari bow towards Tibet. Panchanaro then gave Marpa the complete set of teachings of the Dakini's oral lineage and then arranged certain circumstances to lay causes and conditions for the future. In dependence upon the condition of Marpa's offering of prostration, Naropa foretold that Marpa's family lineage would be short, but that my own Dharma lineage of enlightened activity would be longer than a great river. Having received these prophecies, Marpa returned to his seat in Tibet. In dependence upon the connection made by Marpa's prostration, his son Dharmadode's enlightened form soon dissolved. At the ceremonies marking the anniversary of his passing, all of Marpa's students gathered, and the foremost among them said to their guru, "Lama Rinpoche, your son was like the embodiment of the three times Buddhas, but the poor merit of us sentient beings was not sufficient to keep him here. And now you yourself have gotten old, so how will the precious teachings of the Kagyu lineage ever spread? And for us, your students, what kind of students will we have, and what enlightened activity will we perform? Please give us a prophecy. Marpa replied, I, lineage son of Naro Panchen, have mastery over auspicious connections and dreams. Furthermore, Panchen Naropa gave excellent prophecies for the future of the Kagyu lineage of teachings. So go and await your dreams. These foremost students all prepared well and had excellent dreams, but none of their dreams gave a prophecy. I had a dream of four pillars, and I offered the following account of it to the Guru.
As the Lord Vajradhara commanded me, the dream that came while I slept last night, I shall now recount for the Guru. I pray listen to my short song. In this north of the wide open tumbling, I dreamt of a beautiful snow mountain whose lofty snow peak touched the sky. The sun and moon circled its heights. I dreamt that the sky was filled with light, that rich green grass covered the earth, rivers flowed out in all four directions, and their waters brought everyone life. These rivers flowed straight into the ocean, bright colored flowers painted the land. In general, my dream was like this. To the Guru, who embodies all Buddhas, I offer my dream in this song. To the east of the dazzling great snow mountain, I dreamt that a giant pillar stood. On its top was a mighty lion, wearing a grand turquoise mane. His paws were spread wide in the snow. With his eyes he looked up into the sky, and he leapt about in the white snow. To the Guru, who embodies all Buddhas, I offer my dream in this song. To the south of the dazzling great snow mountain, I dreamt that a giant pillar stood. On its top was a roaring tigress with a shining coat of striped fur. She let out three roars of earth-shaking laughter. In the heart of the jungle, she spread out her paws. With her eyes, she looked up in the sky. In the jungle, she leapt and bound. From jungle to plain stretched a line of trees. To the Guru, who embodies all Buddhas, I offer my dream in this song. To the west of the dazzling great snow mountain, I dreamt that a giant pillar stood. On its top was a giant Garuda, wearing long feathers on his wings. His horns pointed straight up into space. With his eyes he looked up into the sky. Then he soared off into the expanse. To the Guru, who embodies all Buddhas, I offer my dream in this song. To the north of the dazzling great snow mountain, I dreamt that a giant pillar stood, and on it alighted a vulture, with long feathers on the tip. depths of his wings. He made his nest in the rock mountains. At his side I saw a single sun, while great flocks of birds filled the sky. With his eyes he looked up into space. Then he soared so high in the expanse to the Guru who embodies all Buddhas. I offer my dream in this song. Thus were my dreams dependent arisings. I wonder if they signify good. As for me, it was such a delight. I pray to you, please point out the meaning. Please give me your prophecy.
The guru was very pleased. He exclaimed, "That was an excellent dream." To his consort, he said, "Damema, prepare an excellent ganachakra." My mother set out the necessary implements. Marpa's foremost disciples gathered, and when they were seated in the rows of an excellent ganachakra, the guru said to them, "That Mila Dorje Gyaltsen had such a dream is amazing." Marpa's students supplicated him to decipher the meaning of the dream's signs and to give a prophecy based on them. In reply, the Supreme Being and Great Translator sang to his students this song of realization, explaining the meaning of the symbols in my dream.
Lord and protector of wandering beings, you who embody all three times Buddhas, Panchendarupa, at your feet I bow. Listen here, my students, my sons and daughters, the signs in this dream were amazing. Prophecy, a wonderful future. I, your old father, will now tell you how. The land that appeared was the north of Jambudvipa. The moon is teaching, spreading in Tibet. A massive snow mountain appeared in the center. That's your old father, Marpa. Of the whole Kagyu. The mountain's snowy peak touched the heights of the sky. This is the view that is without a peer, circling the peak where the sun and the moon, meditation that's luminous, filled with knowledge and love. Light filled the sky, this is great compassion, dispelling the darkness of ignorance. There appear in green grass covering the earth. This is Buddha activity pervading the world. The great rivers flowing in all four directions are the four Abhishekas' essence teachings. They satisfy all beings, a sign of their power, to ripen and liberate those who need to be tamed. Their waters flowed into and mixed with the ocean, the meeting of mother and child, clear light. Bright colored flowers painted the land, flawless experience of a great fruition. Listen, my students, my sons and daughters, this not a bad dream, it was excellent. To the east of the towering, dazzling snow mountain stood a giant pillar, certain one made of gold. On its top stood a lion, mighty and strong, certain a man with a lion's heart. Turquoise mane worn by that lion shows a whispered teachings will hit their mark. The lion's four paws spread out wide in the snow are four immeasurables arising in him. looking straight up into the sky, a sign of his bidding samsara farewell. By a leaping about in the snow, shows that he's going to freedom's land. Listen, my students, my sons and daughters, this not a bad dream, it was excellent. To the south of the towering, dazzling stone mountain, stood a giant pillar of the Chunor of Jung. On its top was a tigress roaring out loud. Mokdun's a person like a tigress inside. The tigress's thick coat of shining striped fur shows the whisper teachings will hit their mark. Her three great roars of earth-shaking laughter are the three kayas recognizing themselves. The tigress's four paws spread out in the jungle are the four karmas and their mastery. Her eyes looking straight up into the sky symbolize bidding samsara farewell. The tigress leaping in the heart of the jungle shows that Mokdun will go to freedom's land. The line of trees connecting jungle to plain shows that family descendants will hold the lineage. Listen, my students, my sons and daughters, this not a bad dream, it was excellent. To the west of the towering, dazzling snow mountain stood a giant pillar, each in symbol from Tarom. On its top there alighted a giant Garuda, meetings of man like a Garuda. The sweet long feathers he wore on his wings show the whisper teachings will hit their mark. The horns on his head pointing up into space show that view and meditation will be straight and true. His eyes looking straight up into the sky symbolize bidding samsara farewell. The Garuda soaring up in the expanse shows that Meetan will go to freedom's land. Listen, my students, my sons and daughters, this not a bad dream, it was excellent. To the north of the towering, dazzling snow mountain stood a giant pillar, Rila Kuntan. On its top there alighted a giant vulture, Mila's a man like a vulture inside. The sleek long feathers he wore on his wingtips show the whisper teachings will hit their mark. That he made his vulture's nest in the rock mountain shows that his life force is higher than rock. At the vulture's side there is a single sun, so there will come one who is without a peer. The great flocks of birds that filled all the sky, Kagyupa teaching spread far and wide. His eyes looking straight up into the sky are the sign of his bidding samsara farewell. And the vulture soaring high in the expanse is the symbol of traveling to freedom's land. Listen, my students, my sons and daughters, this not a bad dream, it was excellent. Now your old father's work is completed, and my sons and daughters, your work has begun. If you rely on this old man's instructions, the practice lineage's teachings will spread. The lineage's teachings will spread far and
upon hearing their guru's song, all those gathered at the feast felt immeasurable joy. Then the guru opened his treasury of Dharma teachings and practice instructions for his students, giving them explanations by day and setting them to meditate by night. The night that he bestowed the profound empowerment of Naratmya, he had this enlightened intention. I should give each of these students the specific Dharma instruction that is their destiny to master and teach for the benefit of sentient beings. So I will examine the signs that come in the hours before dawn. In the early hours of the following morning, while resting in luminous clarity, Marpa gazed upon his foremost disciples. He saw Ngoktun Chudor of Jung assiduously studying several commentaries on the Heivajra Tantra, Sorten Wangye of Dole practicing Powa, Mitun Sunpo of Tsangrong meditating on luminosity, and me practicing Tummo. Thus Marpa knew what Dharma each student was destined to master and teach for the benefit of beings. He gave Lama Ngokpa the teachings on how to explain the tantras via the six alternatives and the four modes, which set out the meanings of the tantras like a string of fine pearls, Naro's six ornaments, ruby mala, and fire offering implements, and commentarial Dharma texts from India. Marpa told him, bring benefit to wandering beings by explaining the Dharma. He gave Sorten Wangye of Dole teachings on the Poa that is like a bird flying out through an open skylight, along with Naro's hair, fingernails, Amrita pills, and five Buddha family crown, and told him, practice Poa. He gave Mitun Sunpo of Tsangrong teachings on the practice of luminous clarity that is like a candle flame lit in a dark house, as well as Naro's Vajra, Bell, Damaru, and Seashell Kapala, and told him, sever the bardo. To me, he gave teachings on the Tummo that is like fire burning through well-cut pieces of dry wood, as well as Maitripa's hat and Naro's garments. Wander the slate and snow mountains and practice the view and meditation, he commanded me. Then, to the line of his students who had gathered for Ganachakra, Marpa said, just as I have given you teachings in accordance with what is auspicious for each of you, so will you perform great benefit and enlightened activity for your own lineages of students with mainly these instructions. Now, Dodebum is gone, and I have passed on to you the lineage of blessings and instructions of the original Kagyu masters. Exert yourselves well, and your benefit to wandering beings will increase. Then Marpa's great disciples returned to their individual homes. The guru said to me, stay here with me for a few years. I have some extraordinary empowerments and teachings to give you. It is also necessary to ascertain the nature of experience and realization in the presence of one's guru. So go into strict retreat. I stayed in the cave prophesied by Naropa called Sangpuk, where the guru and his consort sent me a portion of offering torma and sacred food and drink from each Ganachakra they celebrated. They showed me great kindness. Thus ends the fourth chapter about how experience and realization were born from meditating in the presence of the guru.